everyone, and welcome to episode 560 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I had a roller coaster of a weekend. I was a Jays fan for like one day, got my hopes up, watched like the greatest throw I've ever seen, and then here we are. I'm no longer a Jays fan, off the bandwagon. That was the quickest bandwagon ride I've ever taken in my life.
For one game, for one day.
For one game, and I was so mad. I can't fathom what people do if they've been like fans since 93, 94, wait like 32 years or whatever and see this. I'm like, oh. I feel bad for the city of Toronto.
I didn't watch it because I find baseball incredibly boring to watch, but I heard it was an exciting game at least. So at least the one game you watched was considered to be a good game of baseball. But anyway, we got another host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. And also Kat, how you doing today?
Kitty is aggressively getting affection right now. So other than that, it was really good. I got to go out and do the launch event for Riftbound this weekend, so I played a lot of Riftbound.
How do you like it so far? I haven't played it at all yet. Do you like it?
It is a lot of fun. I played a lot of Free-for-All, which is their commander format, and then I also played their 1v1. But most importantly, within 24 hours, the price spikes are wild. Because there was a Worlds event in Shanghai, and so the day after, the $40 chase card is now $100, and almost all of that deck now is well over like $900. So,
is this another like game launch where it's impossible to get the cards? Because I remember like Lorcana, Flesh and Blood. Like, is it just sold out everywhere at the moment?
At least sealed product, because I was in line to get sealed product, and within the hour that I was standing there, it sold out. So
it's like IRL secret lair drop.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it is exactly like that. So yeah, I got the privilege of getting to the front. There was a last box at the front, and then I passed on it because I wasn't gonna be that guy. Yeah. So
sealed is actually astronomically high, and some of the cards are super rare. But I had the chance to do the Riftbound pre-release. And I declined because I only have so much individual time, guys. And I sold it out to do the OP13 pre-release. And then we did the OP13 One Piece pre-release. And then there's Riftbound right afterwards. So a lot of people went to play that. And then I looked at some of the cards. They looked okay. I remember when I first looked at the cards online, I'm like, oh my God, they're disgusting. In person, they're like, okay. No one knew how to play the game. That's funny. I'm like, everyone's like, yeah, we're going to go play Riftbound. I'm like, anyone know how to play the rules? I'm like, nope. I'm like, oh, this seems like a lot of work. Right? So everyone was like trying the game, learning the game at the same time. There were some people with like full proxy decks, like ready to go, right? Like they had like, I would assume, constructed decks proxied up and playing. So the hype seemed pretty high for the game. A lot of League of Legends copers, you know, we're like, TSM. Yes, I remember the glory days.
I don't know how people play multiple TCGs. Like, I don't know how you do it, Krim. Like, you have multiple games going. Richard, you do a little bit. Like, how do you find the time and the money and just like the brain power to like play three or four or five different TCGs at the same time? I don't know how people do it.
When you get in early, everything's a dollar. You pray that you threw the right darts in the right spot, and then you're like, okay, cool. Final thought on that though is that everyone was learning this weekend. Did you know that there's a lot, like probably like 12, maybe like 10 cards that have been eroded? And so I was one of the people that I was like, oh, but this card just says I buff my card to match the power of another, the strongest unit. And it doesn't say until end of turn. But it's supposed to say until end of turn. And
classic
I never
TCG misprint.
Yep.
Is this their first set?
I took it at face value.
how in the world? Oh, my God. All right. I guess they're learning as they go with stuff like that. I guess I can't be too harsh because Wizards been doing it 30 years, and they still occasionally leave off to end of turn off some of their cards. But
yeah.
Any, Anyway, we got a podcast to get into. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about Standard and a lot about Avatar. That's going to be the big topic. We're right in the middle of Avatar spoilers and got a lot of cool cards to talk about. But before we get into all that, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit. And Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. Curved sleeves feature rounded corners on the bottom with improved cuffer and shuffle. The sleeves are fully opaque, so you don't have to worry about double-faced cards, and the front interior is always black. They're available in a wide variety of colors, and you can head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting this show. And let's talk some Magic. And before we get to all the Avatar stuff, we're going to get the other stuff out of the way first. And I wanted to start with Richard. You actually brought this post up that I found was very interesting. It was a post that was mostly focused on sports cards because it was from the president of the Upper Deck Company, which is a pretty big sports card company. But I think a lot of it applies to Magic and to the world at large at the moment. Well, what was this post, Richard?
All right, first of all, I think Upper Deck also makes Marvel cards.
Oh, do they really?
They make
I know them from sports cards.
But yeah, they're primarily sports cards, or I don't know, they used to
they
be.
They did Pokemon,
but,
too.
Yeah, they do random cards, but it was, I don't know what this is. This looks like a Facebook post, possibly. I'm not sure.
It's a screenshot. I think it's LinkedIn.
It's LinkedIn?
Looks like LinkedIn,
okay. It's Facebook for people that work. Okay, it's like a screenshot of a screenshot of a screenshot, but basically he was saying that 50% of consumer spending in the U.S. is coming from 10% of the population. So rich people are carrying the market, and not just cards, right? So concert tickets, we've seen like the, you know, Taylor Swift $1,000 tickets, the LaBooBoo stuff, whatever, right? Like it's all concentrated in the wealthy. And when card prices, like cardboard, like the ones we play with, cost $1,000 or more, you're not buying it to play. You're buying it to speculate, right? You're buying it because you think it's going to be worth more than $1,000 tomorrow. And then that works until it doesn't work, like Spider-Man, right? And then, you know, now he's talking about sports cards, but it's always been a part of the sports card business. Like you buy a rookie card and then you hope they're not complete trash. And then one day you have a great collectible. But he's saying everything is speculative now and essentially saying it's going to blow up. You got to be careful. and then when it blows up, we will all feel it. Even the people that don't speculate, you know, the lowly TCG players or whatever, the buy singles, the buy cheapest versions of cards, we're going to feel it when the money shifts, right? And you kind of see this with like the money shifts between like stocks, crypto, Pokemon cards, whatever, right? You go back, it was like art pieces, olives or something, you know, like the speculative market like shifts all over the place. But should we be scared? Kind of scared when this guy's livelihood is like selling cards and he's like, oh, bros, watch out.
I know. You can definitely see the difference between a public company and a private company because I have a hard time, Upper Deck's a private company. I have a hard time imagining a public company like their CEO saying something like that, like, hey, we're probably in a bubble right now and that includes us. So I thought that was interesting. I think we kind of already saw this with Magic. We kind of speed ran this with Final Fantasy collector booster boxes like getting so ridiculously expensive. And then we saw Spider-Man and Avatar follow suit, right? And spike up to like $1,200, even though no one knew what was in those sets. It was purely just, oh my God, these Final Fantasy boxes got so expensive that it's probably going to happen again. It was just purely speculative. And now we see Spider-Man selling for below MSRP. We've seen Avatar is stabilized, but it dropped from like $1,200 down to like $600 now or something. So it had a huge price decrease. So I think we've already kind of seen like a mini version of that happen with those collector boxes. And yeah, I think it is like kind of a concern. I think the other thing you hinted on that we didn't talk as much about, but like the first part about how like 50% of spending is coming from 10% of the population and it's rich people that are basically carrying the market, I think that's a concern, right? Like, we want a lot of people to be able to play Magic. And if we end up in a spot where, and I guess Magic has always been like this to some extent, where you're going to need probably some amount of disposable income to be able to play Magic. But as it gets worse and as prices of other things go up, I could see that Magic would be one of the things that people get priced out of, which I think that is a big concern to me, because I want everyone to be able to play the game. Yeah. What do you think, Grim?
Collector booster prices have always been high.
We saw this also, like, there was already the bubble and then the burst of the bubble back in, like, 2020, right?
Wait,
when we
2020?
Saw the heat.
Oh, the pandemic stuff
lockdown.
When everyone got their checks.
Oh,
yeah.
you mean the general burst. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, but like the TCG boom, right? Like there was a big collectible, like everyone was at home, so everyone bought like, you know, old comics, everyone bought like, you know, their favorite Pokemon from when they were a kid. So, and then all these cards exponentially spiked up and then all of it went down. I think that was like the first big like Pokemon crash. Also, it is wild to me that Richard said a whole sentence about crypto, stocks, Pokemon cards. And I'm just like, to hear Pokemon cards in that is like shocking me, because it is kind of wild. And this is the same for Magic as it trends towards like a lot of the collectible culture, right? Like, I am sad to hear that these things that I love are just now viewed as little stock pieces for investment bros, and that kind of bums me out. That's
You're
the same
sad
as like
crypto
Pokemon.
Prices.
So, oh, so, no, not that. I don't
but,
care about
like,
that.
Like, yeah, crypto bros jokes, can. It's like, when you're too late to the game, right? You're like, oh, the stock market. You know, if you got in the stock market in the 1900s, you're golden, right? We're too late for that. Oh, what's this crypto business, right? Okay, I don't know. It's like fake money, but it's early. So we get in on that, and we saw some people get rich. But no, now it's too mainstream. What's next? How about cards? Pokemon
cards.
But Pokemon cards, we're too late for that, right? Like, Pokemon cards are way too expensive now. So people are speculating on Magic. Right. And some people feel they're too late for Magic. That Black Lotus ship has sailed. Right. So they're like, what about Riftbound? What about One Piece? Right. Like, you can see how it starts getting more and more obscure. And then the value proposition of some of these new products is untested. Right. Like, you know, the stock market has kind of been tested for a really long time. Right. But, you know, what the value proposition of Riftbound cards, nobody knows. Right. It's been out for like literally days. Right. But people are trying to get in early on something to get that bag. Right. And a lot of people feel Magic is safer in that it's been around for a long time, but it hasn't got that collector craze like Pokemon. Right. Which is the fear of all these like investor bros coming in and like buying all their collector boosters and whatever. And Spider-Man was just a mini correction. Like, yeah, you know, it didn't do as well as Final Fantasy, but it's not like you're finding it sitting around at like 70% off MSRP, right? It's not Fallen Empires, right? Like, the real burst is going to be disgusting, right? Like you're not going to be able to fathom what the real burst looks like.
I will say two thoughts on this. So one is, I remember when we were having this conversation a decade ago and people were buying out reserve list cards and we're like, oh my God, who was Martin Shrecky or whatever? Who was that pharma bro that ended up in prison. And he was buying Black Lotuses and he was going to corner the market? And like, so we've had this kind of stuff going on for a long time now. And I'm just looking now, Underground Sea is $1,000 a copy. Yeah, it goes up and down and whatever, but we still haven't seen like that big crash. So I don't think this is a brand new thing. I would say the other bit of good news is, in theory, being a game should make Magic less speculative, right? There's actually some utility with your cards compared to a sports card that sits on a shelf or, you know, whatever, other collectibles. Like, you actually buy the cards to play a game. So I think to me, this is a reminder that the game should matter, right? Because that actually avoids you being a purely speculative asset. But Pokemon, people don't really play Pokemon though, right? Like, it really, it's more into just a speculative asset, basically. But Magic still has a game at its foundation, and I think we need to make sure that keeps going, or else we do end up in a full-on bubble.
I think this is kind of weird because there's also this negative tie to like collector, because the term, like the title of collector has kind of shifted into what is the same as an investment bro. Example, I collect, right? I even slab cards, but I slab 50 cent cards. Like, why would you ever? I spent more to slab a Mr. Mime card than the Mr. Mime card itself, right? So, and, like, I collect a lot of, like, Pokemon, like Gengars. I didn't collect them when I was a kid because I'd grow up to have them be, like, thousands of dollars. So I am bummed that, like, this is kind of just the side effect of when Magic, like, gets bigger as it's getting bigger and it's becoming more mainstream. You are just going to have what Pokemon's having, which is collector bros just buying things and they don't know what it is. Example, like buying the comics just to have the first appearance, but not actually know what's in the comic, right? So there's the ups and downs of everything as things get more popular. And this is one of the sides that I'm not a big fan of when it comes to collecting, because I am not collecting because I think that this is going to be a retirement fund. I'm collecting because I like, funny, you know, mime man, do cool psychic attacks.
I feel like it's kind of two different terms though, right? Like, shouldn't one be like investing and one be collecting or something? Because there's definitely a huge difference between someone who's like, I really love Brainstorm, and I'm going to try to get a copy of every version of Brainstorm ever printed. And you run into those people at Magic Cons, right, that are walking around
with
a binder full of a card that they really love, and they're trying to trade for more copies of it. There's a huge difference between that and someone that's like, I'm going to try to, like, make a profit out of buying out all the collector booster boxes or cornering the market on Black Lotuses or something. So those are really, like, we use the word for collector for both of them, but I think they're really two different archetypes of people, really.
Because there's the collector that has the love for the game, and then there's a collector that's just there for the dollar amount.
Yeah.
But I think it's all, like, I don't know, people always point to the two extremes, but there's, like, the normal person, right, who wants to own a Black Lotus, right? And it's, I don't know which a Black Lotus is nowadays, right? But let's say, like,
unattainable.
like, a couple grand, whatever, like, 10 grand, whatever. I don't know what it is, right? But, like, some large, obscene amount of money, and they can, like, kind of afford it, right? But in their mind, they're like, okay, in the future, if whatever reason I lose my job, I need money, whatever, I can sell it back at basically the same price, right? So it's safe to me to do this, and I will do it, and I will showcase my mantle and, like, show off to my friends. But if I told you it was $10,000 and the minute you buy it, it goes to zero, those people wouldn't buy it, right? Like, they would definitely not buy it. And this threshold changes, right? Like, when, you know, we go back to old Magic, when I buy a modern deck for $500, I expect, you know, like 10 years worth of use out of it. But if I only got 1 month, I would definitely not put $500 into it, right? I am playing the game as intended, but I'm also doing some kind of investment or speculation here, even though it's not strictly that. But that is a huge factor in whether I spend $500 for these cards, right? And the best scenario for me is the $500 deck becomes a $1,000 deck, right? Now I got to play with something expensive. I got to enjoy it that entire time, and I made money out of all of this, right? So I think that's what most people aspire to do, or like try to do. And sure, there's some people that are just buying pallets of cases, you know, boxes, and putting in their closet, right? But I feel those are relatively few. Those are more akin to companies. But most people will buy stuff and hold it, and then hopefully on a rainy day cash it in. But what happens when you can't cash it in, right? What happens when it goes to zero? We're all kind of screwed.
I think that's why I buy assuming everything goes to zero. That nothing. Like, but I do that across everything, right? And, like, maybe because I'm conditioned from the harsh world that is Yu-Gi-Oh, where I remember I had play sets of this card called Tour Guide to the Underworld, right? You needed three of them. They were 300 or, like, 250 per. And within 24 hours, they went from that to $5. So, I just assume that everything, if you buy it, you buy it because you love it for some reason other than a monetary gain. And this is why, like, whatever the TCG is, it doesn't matter what the card is. Oh, I opened, I don't know, Chase card from new set. This is worth $1,500. To me, that's like, yeah, but would I sell it? No, so it's worth nothing. And I'm also going to nothing because that's what I assume.
I feel like it does matter, though, because I've had this exact experience in the past, because I think the problem is Magic is expensive, right? Like, buying Magic cards is expensive. So for me to feel justified spending money on Magic cards, the fact that I think in the back of my head, well, I could always, you know, trade it or sell it if I needed that money. Makes me feel more comfortable doing it. I remember this was like 20 years ago now or something, but this was when Modern Jund was like $1,500 on Magic Online. And I really wanted to play Modern Jund on Magic Online because it was a really good deck. So I justified it because I was like, well, I could always sell the cards and like build a different deck or even get the cash back out if I had to. So I put $1,500 into Magic Online to buy with cash Modern Jund so I could play it. And if I knew that was going to go to zero, I wouldn't have done it. At the time, like that $1,500 actually mattered to me enough that I wouldn't have done that at the time. So I think if the game was cheaper overall, would this be less of a problem? Like, I feel like yes. I feel like because prices are so high, you have to take that value equation into consideration when you spend money just because the prices are so high.
Seth, I'm glad you reminded me of Modern Jund. I don't know how much that deck is worth, but the utility aspect is what's hilarious, right? You're like, oh, they're cards. You can always play them. Tell that to Tarmogoyf, right? Tell that to Liliana the Veil, Dark Confidant. Like, when their price goes down, it's probably tied to their utility too, right? So they cannot even be... My man Bob can't even get a game in Standard down, okay? Like, this you know? So, like, it's just all fake things. Like, they're just pieces of cardboard, and we make all these tricks to, you know, to tell us. And it's not just this, right? It's, like, the stock market, right? Like, you're like, oh... The price of the stock is somehow related to the performance of the company and it should correct itself. It's like wrong, right? Like some companies like trade at like multiples above their earning potential and some are like fractional amounts, right? There's just like this random unknown bias that we just give to random companies. And you know, in the TCG world, we might call it the waifu tax. We might call it like the Timmy tax, you know, whatever, right? But there's just some random arbitrary multiplier that's just thrown on things. And it happens in the stock market. So you can be sure it happens in the TCG market as well. So it's kind of interesting.
In the stock market, there's a waifu tax equivalent.
That's
and
called Tesla. Like some of these companies like
or other,
trade
like,
with like this extra tax for no reason, right?
You're like,
what? They make less cars in this other company, but they're worth like 10 times more. Like what?
Right.
And it is purely speculative, right? Because the bet is that Elon Musk is going to create some robot that changes the world 10 years from now. And if you're the person that buys now, then it's going to be worth way more in the future. So it really is that same speculative process that the Post
was
talking
about. They're going to print the combo piece for Tesla. Okay. The combo
exactly.
So they got to hold on to these LEDs. Like essentially that's what's going on, right?
But is it wild to say then, like, okay, the difference here, though, is that I guess I just don't view card games as stocks, right? And like, all of that. And I know a lot of people do, so to tie back to what Seth said about, like, oh, if I buy into this card game or whatever, it's expensive, that is, trust me, I know that. It's not like I'm out here, like, you know, on my yacht buying these cards. I am out here, like, you know, doing the work, right, to get these cards as well. And I think when you don't think about these card games as like stock pieces and whatnot and like, you know, retirement funds, I think it makes it like I just now understand that I'm buying in at a loss on everything. So that is how I've treated my entire collectible hobbies and all of that. Everything is going to go to the floor at some point. Everything's getting Tarmogoyfed at some point, right?
I actually think that is a very healthy view of it. I just think it's still just a hard view because the game and other collectibles too is just like so expensive. If it was less expensive up front, it would be way easier. Because I don't think of that when I buy, I don't know, Settlers of Catan or something. I don't have any expectation that I'm going to sell that someday. Yeah. Or when I buy a movie on Amazon or a game on Steam, I'm not thinking, oh, I could always sell that back in years from now and get some of my money back. I think it's really just that the upfront cost is so high it makes me think that way. But I think I wish I thought more like you did in some ways, because it does seem like a healthy way to interact with it if you can afford it. Anyway, we should probably move on
bingo.
And talk.
I can't afford it, so I just don't buy it, right? Or I wait.
Let's move on. Any final thoughts on this before we hit up some other topics? All right, let's move on. I want to ask real quick about Standard before we get into our Avatar stuff. So Manning's next week. We're not going to get into that again because we already talked about Manning's last week. So we'll get those next podcast. We'll be able to talk about what actually got banned in Standard. This weekend was Spotlight Series Liverpool. 13 of the 16 top 16 decks, or is it Cauldron decks? And this got me wondering, is this an all-timer Standard deck? Like, is this going to be a Affinity or a Cobblade or one of those decks that 10 years from now, we're like, man, remember how busted Is It Cauldron was? That's one of the best Standard decks of all time. Or is that just recency bias? Are we overrating it? Like, how good in the historical context of Standard, how good do you think this deck actually is? Is this actually one of the best Standard decks ever?
I mean, okay. If this is true, then does that mean Corey Steelcutter is the greatest of all time? Because this deck, right, was held back by Corey Steelcutter.
I guess that is actually true, right?
Right? Like, yeah, they may be in the same color pairing, but, like, this was the boogeyman behind the boogeyman, right?
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, then no, right? Because then I still think within a format, this one is good. It's very strong. People will gravitate towards it because there's lots of play to it and whatnot. But I don't think it fully stifled the format like Oko did, right? Yeah. I still sit and maybe like years removed from throwing the Eldraine, I have not buried that yet. Right?
I'm not going to recover. Yeah,
I have never recovered. Right, I will never recover, and I will always tell everyone that if you miss the Oko days, that's to your benefit, because I think that's still one of the grossest decks of all time. Now, I have not played Urza's, like, you know,
the 90s
Urza
stuff,
Saga,
yeah.
Right? But I did play Skull Clamp. I played, you know, all of these formats, and I still think Oko is at the top, then probably Skull Clamp. And then, like, it would probably be... maybe Cobblade is up there, because for me, I don't view it as a negative. I view that as a positive. So to me, that wasn't like, oh, God, what a bad time it was. But I at least think there's a few formats before VV is, like, goaded, right? I think VV is a very strong deck, and I think Corey Steelcutter would take over before VV would.
It's kind of funny. I will say, so I would probably agree with that. I really want to do a bracket and try to actually play the decks against each other and figure it out. Maybe it's like not going to stand up with like Oko. So yeah, maybe it's like a top 5, top 7 deck. Although with the thing about Prowess and Cutter, I actually think that Cauldron would have beat it out. Like, I think that they just like hadn't figured out Cauldron yet. It was just Paulo at that pro tour with Cutter, and it was like Paulo and a couple of his buddies that played it, or his team. And it did really well there. So I think, like, if both decks existed in parallel for longer, I think eventually it would have been like a hybrid where you're kind of like doing all of those things together. Or Cauldron, I think, actually is the better of those two decks. I think, like, it would have shaken out in the long run with Cauldron winning.
You would have died before, I think, your Cauldron, like, thing assembled, would have gotten assembled.
Maybe that's
right,
true.
Because isn't that the issue that they ran, like, they tried to prep for it, and they did lose to Corey Steelcutter, right? Because there's just Corey Steelcutter starts that you just cannot beat.
Yeah, no, that is true. But I feel like that, I don't know, what do you think, Richard? Where do you land on this? How good is Cauldron and the Cutter thing?
It doesn't matter because no one cares. that's the difference, right? Like, I'm not even like trying to be like funny. I am, but like when Cobblade was the best deck, every Magic player in the world played Standard, and it was like the center of the world, and it had a huge impact. People don't even play Standard, let alone Standard enough to understand like how strong these decks are, or to like fight them. Yeah. Game. Like the other thing is like, it's defending its title without any challenge as well, right? It's like when the heavyweight sits there like on their belt without actually doing a fight. Because the banning was announced, no one's even bothering like prepping or like fighting into VV. Like, it doesn't matter because it's going away. Why waste this energy? Play some commander games. But I do think because the overall narrative is Universes Beyond, is Commander, is all these other things, that no matter how broken a deck is or whatever, like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, it simply will not compare to the time before where everyone played standard. Everyone knew the consequence of removing this one card from your sideboard and adding this other one. You know, like it was like a different time. So I don't think you can compare them. And I don't think we'll even talk about Vivi anymore in like 2 years. yeah, it was a thing, right? Like, I don't know. Think of some broken standard deck from 2007 that was not like the one that won the Pro Tour. Like, I don't know, right? Like, it's just a deck that when someone brings up, you'll see it, but we're not going to talk about it like it was Cobblade or Oko. I think Oko was like the starting, like the last one, right? It's the last Airbender, guys. that was the tipping scales between Constructed and Commander. And I'm pretty sure we're talking about like broken Commanders from now on out, right? And stuff like that, right? And not about these 60 card cards.
You might be right, because that was like the perfect storm, right? Of like Arena launching, MPL, top five esports. So that was like the last really big push of like Standard being the focus. And that made Oko and those decks like such a big topic and was such a big thing. And it's just, I think you're right that it's not like that anymore. So I think I care because I find it interesting to try to put the decks in their historical context. But I think Richard might be right overall that like no Standard deck is going to actually matter in the grand scheme of things in 2025, because Standard is just not as important to Magic as it used to be. But anyway, let us know.
It's Vivi, right? We have the number, yeah. Right? Percentage of metagame, percentage of tops. Like, it beats all the other ones. Whether it can beat Oko in head-to-head is kind of irrelevant. It's what it does to its contemporaries, you know? Like, what does it do to its surrounding metagame? And Vivi's just, like, stomping through.
It's
and the real question is, can you Tom Brady Vivi? Once, like, let's say you ban two things, does he go to a new team and like have another like two more championships, right? Like, because Oko got hit so many times that he's like, yeah, whatever, bro, right? Like, Hogak, yeah. Right? He's just shrugged it off, right? Just went to a new team and destroyed some more. So there's also the longevity, right? If you knock a few more cards out of Vivi and it keeps going, it would be impressive. But chances are, Vivi itself is going, so we'll never have this conversation, right? Like, career-ending injury too soon. We don't know what will happen.
Yeah. Career-ending injury next Monday at 11 a.m. Yep. Eastern. Oh, I can't wait.
Maybe Cauldron gets the
poor
hit.
Poor guy.
Maybe Cauldron gets
the hit. Yeah, I guess that's true. That is possible. Anyway, let's talk some Avatars. Avatar spoiler season. This set, I gotta say, looks pretty awesome. Looks pretty awesome. I finished watching Avatar this weekend, and
all of it?
I skipped through a couple of boring episodes. There's a couple episodes that are like the beach episodes. So I did fast forward through a couple.
There's a beach episode?
Yeah.
In season like 3 or something.
There actually
is a world. But it's not like the weirdo anime beach episode.
But
like
it still is a beach episode.
It is a beach episode.
It just didn't really matter to the overall story. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to skip past this a little bit.
Do you not care for character development between Ty Lee and
Oh my God. Are we calling filler episodes character development now?
There is, though, because they talk about their trauma and facing it and like actually confessing and communicating with each other, because it's the problematic group of villains, right? You have Mai, you have Azula, you have like Zuko there, yeah. All of that. Are you saying character development?
Maybe,
okay.
Maybe I gotta go back and watch it. I read the little summary and it said they go to the beach, and I'm like, I'm not watching this. I'm just going to the next one.
Seth knows.
No, dude.
I heard people in the house about the beach episode.
Yeah. But anyway, I actually enjoyed it, especially once I got to the end of season 2 and season 3. I actually thought, not even like for a kid show, it was good. I was like, I'm glad I watched this. As an adult person, I watched the show, and it actually seemed like a good show. But I'm curious. I'm curious what you guys think. Now that we've seen the spoilers, like, I think this set actually is really good. On a scale of Final Fantasy to Spider-Man, what is your current reaction to Avatar? Because I feel like it's closer to Final Fantasy than Spider-Man. Quite a bit close. I don't think it's all the way to Final Fantasy, but I think it's much more on the Final Fantasy end of the scale as far as just like the quality of the set and how good it is. But I'm curious what you guys think of it.
Okay. So for me, I think that I like still. So now that we've seen more of the cards, right? I like firebending.
Yep.
I think firebending is going to be pretty sweet when you have activated abilities and whatnot. I already loved earthbending upon preview with Toph, right? So I really liked it there. And I think airbending is going to be an like another like actual really powerful one as you think about like warp, as we've seen some of the elementals come in from like the Lorwyn Eclipse previews, right? So yep. I think airbending is going to have a lot of play through that. I love waterbending in the show.
You don't like the cards?
I think Convoke is a powerful, and you know, whatever the artifact version is, very powerful in gameplay. So when you mash that together, it's great. But why does the waterbending ability just not hit, man? I look at it and I'm just like, okay, well, I guess maybe because I always viewed waterbending, and since Seth, you just recently watched the show again, did you not feel like waterbending was a lot more defensive? I get that they wanted to go with like, the water moves through all of us, right? So we do like everything is a community and a unit kind of thing. But when like Kitara's fighting 1v1 in the caves or whatever, like you're seeing waterbenders 1v1, waterbending felt, I don't know, more defensive to me. And
I think that's true.
Didn't feel that way reading the cards. So far, maybe something will change my mind. But as of right now, I love all the abilities. Like so far, I think the most standard playable is probably airbending and then like firebending. And then, yeah, that's my thoughts on that at least.
It's funny. I guess I hadn't really thought about the waterbending thing. I think you're right now that you mention it, but it's one of those things that I kind of don't really care about, like how well the flavor matches up to the show that I watch. I see
the
waterbending.
Just watched the
like,
whole thing of Avatar. You doesn't just, care for flavor.
But he just said
I skipped character development. So you know what?
He also watched three seasons of like 20 plus episodes.
I did watch. At least they were mostly like 20 minutes, so you could get through them kind of quick. But I feel like waterbending is actually busted in gameplay. Like, I know maybe it doesn't hit flavor-wise, but I actually think power level-wise, some of the cards, I'm like, oh my god, I think that card's actually busted. Richard, where are you at with this set?
Alright, first, I refuse your scale. I actually like Spider-Man, right? But I was actually trying to think of, like, you know, Avatar does feel a lot more magic-y, and it does feel better than Spider-Man. Why? And I was, like, racking my brain over this, and one of the things about the mechanics is there's a lot more gameplay and a lot more Johnny aspects, like something like firebending, where you just add red mana when you attack. You're like, what do I do with this? Like, it doesn't really work in the normal way. Like, obviously, I can cast an instant, but maybe I should, like, put fire breathing on my creatures or something so I can just pump this red mana, or maybe I can save it. Like, it gives all these new, interesting gameplay things you can do. It makes you want to look through your bulk to see if you can find something that like combos with firebending. Whereas web slinging was like, yeah, okay, value, right? Like, and not even, right? Half the time you're just like out tempoing yourself. But like, it's a very straightforward thing. Same with like airbending, right? I'm sure we'll talk about some of these cards, but we're like, is airbending good? Is this like Wrath actually good? Like, what am I doing with this? What can I do? Do I need a blink deck to make this work? Or is this just good enough at face value? So as a longtime Magic player, the Avatar mechanics are a lot deeper, right? The flavor's like, whatever. I'm like with Seth, like, I don't know what the flavor is really, right? But like, there's a lot more play and nuance to it. And then the other thing is they're like non-technology things, right? Like, they're wearing like robes and like skins and like,
yeah,
it looks like they're not in modern day 2025, right? Yeah. Like, so it's more of like ancient obviously they're shooting fire and stuff, so it's more, you know, fantasy elements. The art style wise, we accept anime, I guess. Like, I know a lot of the criticisms on Spider-Man was like, is this AI? You know, is this CGI? You know, is this computer generated art? You know, like, Avatar never gives you that impression, even though it may or may not be. I have no idea, right? But it's more of like the traditional hand-drawn art looking things. So I don't know. Like, there's a lot of differences, but I do feel, even though I like Spider-Man, Avatar like fits very well, and I think it's interesting. So I think it's going to do well, even though I care like almost nothing for Avatar. I'm the Avatar hater here.
Yeah,
Seth has convinced me to continue going on. He said, I'm at the cusp of it getting good. But you know what? Morgan also told me, oh no, was it Krim or Morgan? I was at the cusp of getting good halfway through season one. And that didn't pan out. So
half of season one is okay.
I thought the whole first season was pretty. I liked the last episode of the first season, like the that episode. But I, other than that, I thought the whole first season was pretty meh. But
the latter half was solid. But yeah, like, I mean, look, you know, Richard, you touched upon it, and Seth, you're talking about how, like, oh, well, Final Fantasy Avatar feels more like Magic, right? Spider-Man didn't. Now, as you would have guessed, I also enjoyed Spider-Man, and I'm kind of happy that we got a departure from Classic or anything that feels remotely like already been done in Magic. Right? And I am a person that loves Magic, and I think this will give you a little perspective on why I'm okay with, like, the New York City block meme. I love that meme. It's so funny. but, like, I'm okay with Magic venturing outside of just fantasy because I want that, personally. I want to see Magic get more than just fantasy. I want to see the New York block. I want to see space. I want to see, I don't know, almost anything that they could think of that they haven't done before. Even if not, look, I'm all for them taking the big swing, even if the swing is a miss. So I like seeing Magic continue to explore.
In a weird way, it's so funny that you say that, because in a weird way, I view Spider-Man exactly the opposite. Based on what you were saying and Richard was saying, I think the issue with Spider-Man, the more I'd be thinking about it, is that it wasn't innovative enough. Like, I think being a small set was part of it. But if you look at the actual gameplay, the mechanics were like Mayhem, which was essentially Madness again. It was Web Sling, which was essentially Ninjutsu again. And then it was Everything's a Spider. When if you look at the mechanics in Avatar, like Richard was saying, airbending something really new and unique, and we don't know how good it is. Firebending, we haven't, it's making you dig through your bulk to find it. So I think that's where Spider-Man failed the most was in the gameplay thing, with the mechanics just being kind of boring and like retread mechanics that we'd already seen before, when Avatar feels much fresher to me with just like how the mechanics are designed. Discount like the flavor and the characters and all that, just like gameplay wise, I feel like Avatar is much more innovative mechanically than Spider-Man was.
But I mean, so the airbending I think is really cool, being able to control that and like whatnot, but and firebending, but otherwise, you know, like I do feel like Convoke is being reused here, right?
That's true. So, waterbending, like, is kind of a retread.
And then we also had retreads in Edge of Eternities. But I also think I mentioned that I really like the retread of old abilities, but like improved upon, right? Like taking, like, you know, Evoke and bringing it to 2025 or something like that. So that's why I liked web slinging. And that's why I think Mayhem is an interesting way to go about things. So I've liked the retreads.
I think it would have looked much better if it was just like a bigger set and it had those mechanics along with a new mechanic or two, instead of like, I think it actually goes back to the set size again, maybe, where there just wasn't that room to put more mechanics in it and so forth. But
and that is exactly my problem with that set, in that Spider-Man felt too small. And like, yeah, like that there, and my heavily biased opinion is also that there needed to be Null. Yeah, you mentioned Null, you had this, but you didn't actually have the big bad himself. Anyways, but yeah.
Okay, let's get to some cards. We need to talk about some cards.
Yeah, we're going so slow.
We'll go controversial cards. So hit them over at mtgpreviews.com. But Spirit Water Revival, 1BB, sorcery. As an additional cost to cast this spell, you may water bend 6. And remember, when you water bend, you can tap artifacts and creatures to pay for colorless cost or generic cost. Draw 2 cards. If this spell's additional cost was paid, instead shuffle your graveyard into your library, draw 7 cards. You have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. Exile this card. So only you do this. Your opponent does not time twister as well. Is this playable at all? Seth, you're very excited about this card. Where is this playable?
I think his card's like, so you got to be in the right deck for it, right? Because you need to be able to pay that waterbend cost.
Commander or standard? What are we talking about?
Well, standard, I think I could see it in standard with maybe Pinnacle Emissary. I'm more excited in older formats where you have the ability to like really flood the board with cheap artifacts very quickly in a format like Modern or Legacy if you want to. So I'm more excited about Eternal formats than standard in specific, but also in Commander. Think of like Phil's Lonus deck and just how many clues you can get on the battlefield or archetypes like that. To me, it seems very realistic for this to be 3 mana draw 7, which I have to think is incredibly broken. Even if you think about Standard, you go turn one, a Spyglass Siren, turn two, Nebulous Inspector, Spyglass Siren. You untap with enough bodies and clues that turn three, you draw seven to get no max hand size for three mana. Like, is that not absurd? Like, is this card not just insanely broken? What am I missing about it? Am I just too pie in the sky on this and it's not going to be consistent enough? When I read this, I see, like, just a broken Magic card.
I mean, this is clearly anecdotal, but you're missing the part where on turn three I get Star Caged and I lose everything.
That is true. if you get Wrathed or something, it is much worse.
I mean, look, we're talking about a very, yeah, like, it is possible. I think you're right. Like, it is not unlikely, as you would think, that you would be able to play Spyglass Siren, Novice Inspector, or whatever, right? And then just spawn a bunch of game pieces and then waterbend with all of it. So I do think that more often than not, though, you need to look at the base level of this, and that is going to be draw two.
So divination, right? Bad, yeah, bad because you got extra blue mana in there, but worse divination. Slightly
yeah,
worse.
Like it's a divination with the ability to scale with whatever you have, right? Maybe. But like as of right now, I'm looking at it as just a draw two, and unfortunately it exiles itself. I was hoping that this would like be a lesson, but I guess it's not. So I don't know. I think this card is just fine.
Cool.
It's just a divination.
Ooh. We need a tiebreaker, Richard. We need a tiebreaker.
Oh, okay, it's one step up from complete utter trash. So
fine. Divination.
It goes in the, I am pretty sure this is unplayable until you show me otherwise, right? So I can see a world where this could work, but having six widgets on the battlefield to waterbend is not trivial. And before that, this is just like the most terrible like divination you've ever like divination is so far, like we can instant speed divination, yeah. Right? Like divination is so far removed from this, like double blue impossible. So I can see a combo deck, like all you're doing is just spamming things to the board, do this, dig for a combo piece, combo win, do this again, etc. But I feel this is like so win more. But show me the good combo piece. I would never play this in Commander, by the way.
Really?
Where are you gonna get six things to where are you gonna get six things to tap? So I guess if you're explicitly playing a clue, like some kind of like Academy manufacturer deck.
Yeah, you have any fill deck.
did Academy manufacturer win you the game or Spirit Water Revival win you the game? You know what I mean? Like, yes, if you have something that's hemorrhaging out tokens, you can play this. But in a normal deck, no. And, like, normally, this is not red. You're not going to be a zero hand size such that you wheel plus seven. You know what I mean? Like, normally, if the game is going well, your hand is pretty healthy. So I actually, like, don't play this. And I would view it like Seagate Restoration. If Seagate Restoration was a card, you would never play it. It's because it's an MBFC that you play it, right? If this was an MBFC, it'd be the greatest MBFC of all time up with Seagate Restoration. But because it's not, it's actually just divination. And I have a million other divinations that I can play that are way better. So fill deck, token decks, yes. Everything else, probably not.
You don't lose your hand, just so it's clear. I mean, hopefully,
you don't lose your hand.
It's
just
and
draw seven.
You draw
my
seven.
Bad, my
yeah.
bad.
But
my
but
bad.
Still, yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm very high on it. I'm going to be trying to break it. Maybe, I don't know. When it comes to cards like this, I always see the upside. So it is possible I'm overrating it, but the upside just seems so big.
You play Smothering Tides. you go one round, and that gives you four treasures that you can double do. You can save for a future turn. All right. Okay. Planetarium of the oh no, the Wan Shi Tong. I didn't watch enough Airbender to know what this is. Six mana.
It's Owlman.
Legendary artifact. One generic tap scry two. Whenever you scry or surveil, look at the top card of your library. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. What? Okay. Do this once each turn.
Is this card any good, Krim? Like, I'm curious. Like, so obviously if you're a scry or surveil theme commander deck, it's going to be great. Like, you'll play it in a deck like that. But outside of commander, like, can you play this? Like, we have Omniscience in Standard. This is cheaper. It can let you play something big, but it's not guaranteed. What do you think? Is this card any good? I'm very torn on this.
I think it's very good, right? You also, because it's whenever you scry or surveil, so imagine being able to also like, you know, like Fetch used the surveillance that we all love, right? Like you can now do some shenanigans. And then it itself allows you to scry too, right? If this just sat here and had like just that text without the scry too, I think it would be bad.
Yeah.
But for 6 mana and also has the scry two clause attached to it and all of the other text, I think this is really good.
And you can do it during your opponent's turn. So you can, like, activate this during your turn, get a free card. Crack a fetch, get a surveil land during your opponent's turn, get a free card. Like, once you start adding up, like, the amount of times you can scry your surveil, it does become pretty exciting.
I mean, everything passively does it, right? Like, Price of Fame. All right, cool. 2 mana, kill your creature, surveil 2. Right?
So like, it's... build around it then? Like, it's kind of a build around card then? Or would you jam this in like a more generic deck without a bunch of like scry and surveil synergies?
See, that's the thing. I think a lot of stuff already has scry and surveil. So I'm not really building around anything, right? I'm just throwing this in there because it would be more of a build around if it also didn't have that activated ability. But because it has that, it's kind of its own contained engine. And then anything else you can kind of do on top of that is even better in Commander.
Wait, Commander, Standard? What are we talking about?
Commander. Because, but Standard, oh yeah, I think this is not playing. Like, you're not playing this as Standard. Like, this is terrible.
Okay, Richard, Tron and Modern. 7 mana, 6 for this, 1 to activate, Emrakul, GG. Did we break it?
But how did you get the Emrakul on top?
the magic god smiled upon me.
I know it's a meme because it's 7 mana, but I don't think... Is Tron still playable, Seth? Can we still Tron? Are we still Tronning?
Yeah.
But
I don't
this seems
Tron
like a worse thing. It seems like you just drop your 7-drop and call it a day. And if you can't win with that and you need to go another turn, like, you untapped with 7 mana again. Like, you can't cast your spell, like, the wholesome way. You know what I mean? Like... So I think this is good if there's some kind of infinite or some kind of combo that just, like, naturally you slap this down. Maybe it takes you 1 turn or 2 turn, but you win the game. Like, on, like, your turn, you cast a spell. Your opponent's turn, you cast a spell. You win the game. Something like that. But otherwise, it just seems slow. Like,
is Tutor to the Top of your library shenanigans enough to make it worth it? Because the way it works, there is like a window where you activate it and it puts a trigger and you could like vamp Tutor and put the best card in your deck on the top of your library and play it for free. Like, is that enough of a combo to make it good, you think? Like, or Brainstorm, I guess you could do the same
show
thing.
Show and tell, like, you know, like, yeah. Like reanimate. Like, I don't know. Like, can't we just do this like much more efficiently and much earlier?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it depends. Maybe there's like... some color, like a, you know, like a mono white combo or something that does this that you could not reanimate and you could not show and tell in. But it seems a lot. Like, it has to be a value piece, right? But like, it's hard to get value with this too. Like, you got to keep putting stuff on top and then scrying. Because if you just cast one spell, like, how much mana did you save, right? Like, you just drew a card, you know? Like, you got to do it multiple times. That's why I was wondering what Krim was saying. Like, is there a control deck in Standard where you slap this down as your finisher and you like slowly grind out more value and that's somehow better than whatever 6-7-drop bomb you could play? Seems slow, but I could see that, you know, like if you can win with Nephalia Drownyard, you can win with Planetarium, right? Yeah. So can we use it like that?
I think there's too much artifact destruction right now. Everyone's ready for Cauldron, so a simple Abrade trading up with a 6-mana artifact is kind of brutal. I think this is unplayable in Standard. I think this is awesome in Commander.
Although Cauldron will be gone, presumably, as the top deck by the time this releases, so maybe if the meta shifts, it could get more likely, but it is still a lot of mana.
But will artifacts leave entirely? And I think the answer is no, right?
Probably not.
Because blue-white artifacts still exist, so...
Simulacrum Synthesizer pre-busted.
Yep.
All right, we haven't power crept enough, so the owl itself is coming. Wan Shitong Librarian. X blue blue. Legendary creature. Bird spirit. 1/1. Flash. Flying. Vigilance. When it enters, put X +1/+1 counters on him. Then draw... half X cards rounded down. When an opponent searches their library, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card. What happened?
Was this a big character in the show, Krim? I don't even remember.
You don't
even
know who
this
is?
Was this? I don't even remember this owl being like a big part of the show.
Was
like,
it in the beach episode?
It wasn't like a main character, right? Like, it was just like a one episode thing or something.
Yeah. Okay, so you remember Ko, probably, yeah. Then, because it was even more spooky. Okay. He's got a few parts in the show, but it's not like he's part of the gang. I like to call it there, the gang. But yeah, like, he's not part of that, but he's a big part of the story and developing. And then, like, you know, again, more lessons, right? So things to learn. Okay, hold on.
Dial
it back before we talk about just the lore. Okay.
Magic-wise.
I think, yeah, like, he's a part of the show, but it also works in magic because he kind of looks like the Strixhaven Dean, right?
He does that. So, he does look like a Strixhaven card, yeah.
And I love this card. I think this card is nuts. Right? I mean, it's got flash, and then the Flying Vigilance, sure, great, whatever. But enters, put X-1-1 counters.
What do you mean, whatever? Flying Vigilance?
The flash is what matters to me, right? And then getting the 1-1 counters and then drawing half of X cards rounded down, so you get a flash Hydroid Crisis, right? But then instead of gaining the life and whatnot, you get to make it so whenever your opponent searches, put a 1-1 counter on Wanchi Tongue and draw a card. Now, combine this with cards like Demo Field and things like that, right? So you're kind of forcing the searches, you're getting a land, you're getting all of that. I kind of love this card, right? That search clause, and then this only gets better with the whatever format, depending on how many more tutors there are. So Commander, whenever somebody cracks a fetch land, right? So you now get to have a better version of, what is it, Archivist of Ogma, right? So for Commander-wise, and then Standard, I think this is also very playable in Standard. This is so good.
I think this card might actually be borderline too good. Like, I think this card is, like, obscene. Like, it's ridiculously broken. Like, in Standard, as you said, it's Hydroid Crosses with flash, which is, yeah, you don't gain the life, but if you flash in during combat and block something, you gain a bunch of life off that anyway. Plus, flash is just more powerful than gaining a bit of life. So, in Crosses, I think people forget, like, I know it was a less powerful era of Standard when we had Ravnica Allegiance and stuff, but that was, like, a legit one of the best cards in the entire format, right? Wasn't Crosses, like, straight up one of the best creatures of its era?
But it is not a weak format. I don't know where you thought that format was weak. At least I didn't think so. But yeah, Hydroid Crisis was a very good card in that format.
And then it's a split card with Archivist of Ogma, which I think makes this card busted in, like, Modern, in Legacy. Like, if you erase the Hydroid Crosses stacks and just had a flash 2-drop that was a 1-1, that when your opponent searches gets a counter and it has flying, I think that would be, like, a very playable card in Modern and Legacy and Commander. So I think this card is just, like, you could split it in half and it would still be a staple in some format. And when you put all those abilities together, I think this is just, like, easily the best card in the set. Not even close.
This might be the next Oko.
Oh!
Right? Speed running its way to the top of the meta in literally every single format possible. And then eating a band. Like, we just talked about our poor boy Tarmogoyf. This is Tarma, like, a 2-mana 1-1 fly and flash vigilance.
Good.
Your opponent fetches. It's a 2-2. You drew a card. Your opponent fetches again. It's a 3-3. It grows even faster than Tarmogoyf, right? Like, it's a flyer. It has flash. It has vigilance. Late game, you slap it down. You draw even more cards. This makes me not want to play Magic. You're like, what is the point? You know, like, why think, right? Just keep slamming these boys down and, like, it's too much. There's only one downside. And the one downside is it's legendary, but it's a must-kill threat that your opponent must kill anyway. So it doesn't even matter if you have extra copies in your hand. If it sticks on the board, you've won the game, right?
And if it doesn't, yeah, you want another one.
So you got to play the counter to this deck in, like, Legacy, which is, like, fetchless mono red something, right? Like, you just don't fetch, right? You shear and you blaze this thing, right? Like, I don't know, right? It's so ridiculous.
And it's even a blue card, so even when it's bad, you pitch it to your forces, pitch it to subtleties. Like, yeah, like, even if you draw extras, it's so crazy to me. Like, I was expecting them to have some really push, like, Aang or something. It just surprises me that this Owl is the card that they went ridiculously hard on. So, yeah, I'm kind of on the Richard end where I think this card, if anything, it could be too good. It is hard for me to imagine this card not being very, very strong in multiple formats.
I feel like it will slot into all the older formats where it becomes even more powerful. Like Ledger Shredder, forget that. Look at this thing, right? Like, it's gonna, Even Commander, it's like every single, like Limited, it's great. Like literally every single format, it's great.
Guys.
And why does it have Vigilance? Like, so you can play this huge thing with Flash, hit your opponent, and you have it back to block with. There's no, like, there's no risk. There's no downside.
It could just be Hydroid Crisis and we would still play it.
Yeah.
But they added all this random stuff onto it.
They put, like, a whole bunch more words on it.
Oh, I got great news for you, too, because I think Blue Red needed a little help, you know?
Yeah, this is gonna be post-VB been struggling.
It's going to be nice to know that you now have a sync, right, with all that firebending mana, if firebending takes off.
Oh, right. You can flash in with firebending. Like,
yeah.
It works with all the cauldron mana. It works in ramp decks. Plus, it's just, I guess the searching mode is the weakest part in standard, because there's not that much tutoring, but that's the mode that becomes very powerful once you get to fetch land formats.
I hate
standard.
This,
you're only
fetching,
caring
though.
About the top half.
Yeah, but it's like a free like grow plus one every turn in every other format, right? Like it's
and
super.
Sure.
And imagine you're playing against someone that actually searches their deck. They're like crack a fetch, like search,
Mono
like
green.
Rampant growth. You know, like kind of those kind of deals, right? And then you're like, oh okay, you're just gonna get hit by a 7/7 on turn three. It's fine, right? Like
mono green in standard does fetch a lot, actually, as I think about it. So they're doing Fabled Passages, whatever, the little access tunnel, all of that. So that is kind of funny.
Delver
and
was peak design,
actually,
man.
They actually just printed Rampant Growth in standard, too. That was a lesson.
Right.
Yeah, straight up Rampant Growth.
just win the die roll. Right, Rampant Growth before the bird comes down.
We're going a little long today, but I got to ask you guys about one more card real quick, and then we got to wrap it up. So one of the big debates this week has been the like source material cards, the ones that are just like clips from the actual show. And there's been a big debate over whether you like these. Would you rather have, you know, artists reinterpret them? But one card in specific, the Cruel Tutor, has gotten a lot of mixed response. It is a very divisive card. If you haven't seen this card, it is literally just a super close up on a dude's face. And that's it. What do you guys make of this? Like, I've heard some people say this is the ugliest Magic card ever made. Yes, Krim is doing a pretty good approximation of Cruel Tutor. What do you guys think of this card? Is it too much?
So I like buying cards that are... Obviously, I think this one is so meme and so, like, it looks so funny and poorly cropped. Like, it's like, why zoom in that much? That it adds, it's so far in the other direction that we've gone back around where, like, yo, this is kind of sick. Right?
It's like, because it's so bad it's good almost. Like, like you watch a really bad B-movie, but you know that's,
exactly.
like, kind of the gimmick of it is it's, like, supposed to be bad.
Yeah.
So you can kind of appreciate how horrible it is in a weird way. Yeah.
Because, like, you could easily... Look, I don't have a problem with them grabbing screenshots. That's why it's, like, the source material, right? And it has to be... Obviously, that's why Spider-Man worked better, because the source material is meant to be drawn by panels, right?
The Spider-Man ones look pretty legit, yeah.
But, like, Final Fantasy and this is, like, screenshots of a show that is still not in, like, not even 1080p. So, like, you know what I mean? And so you kind of look at it and you're like, oh, whoa, that looks... exactly like the TV show, which is, you know, again, why it's called the source material. I get it, yada, yada, yada. But I think they're funny, and so that's why I like it, because it's so funny looking.
I see you shaking your head, Richard. What do you think of this one?
I mean, it's all fun and games, so you crack your $600 box of Avatar, you get this garbage, right?
This guy's
you're like,
face.
What? Like... like, if you posted this on, like, custom Magic cards, you would get, like, banned. Right? You're like, oh, low effort post. You know what I mean? Like, it's so bad that,
it's
like,
so
we
bad.
Had to, like, triple check the source. Like, is this a real Magic card? Can someone from WotC confirm this is a real thing that someone thought was a good idea? Like, it's not even, like, it's like 480p, boys. Like, oh, my God. It is so bad. Like, some of these screenshot cards are okay. Like, you know. Bribery, I'm like, okay, you know, it looks almost reasonable, right? But like this cropping, this choice, like, oh, it's so bad.
I think the problem
they should
is
just
like,
reinterpret
why,
the iconic scenes for their special treatments. Like this, I would never play, and I would feel insulted if you gave me this card
material.
And you're like, yeah, this is the chase card of the set.
Don't call it source. Like, That's look at SpongeBob. I mean, I can't believe I'm using this as an example of something wonderful and magic.
But look at the
SpongeBob secret lair drop. It would have been way worse if they actually just took screen caps of the old episode rather than having an artist reinterpret them in a way that makes sense on the magic card, and the meme still came across, even though you had an artist reinterpret them. So I'm kind of on team. And I guess it varies based on IP, because I did think the Spider-Man ones looked legit good. But as Krim said, it's kind of made for that in some sense. It's pretty easy to take a comic book panel, make it work on a card. When it comes to a TV show, even the Final Fantasy ones, I thought were pretty hit or miss. Some of them I thought looked good and some of them I thought looked pretty bad. So I would rather see the iconic scenes reinterpreted by a magic artist to like make sense on a card. But the Cruel Tutor is just, that is the worst of the bunch. I can kind of see Krim's part of like, it's so good, it's bad. I played in the same deck as my Dwight Secret Lair Drop Swords to Plowshares maybe. And like, I might run it in there, like the cringe deck. But but as far as actually playing it unironically, no.
The tragic slip that also got revealed from that office drop where Kevin spilling the chili is so odd that I want it. I see like this is, oh, God.
I'm listening to the death of magic in real time, guys.
At least it was an actual slip. Remember the original tragic slip? He was getting kicked off the edge of the
building.
Yeah,
that's not a slip.
It's not even a friggin' slip, Watsy.
That's a favorite push, right?
Wait. Are you guys insulting the original tragic slip and defending the new tragic slip from the secret lair?
But he didn't slip, dude.
Yeah, I just...
Okay, this is where we have to have a podcast to break down.
There's way more slipping in the office one.
My heart can't handle this. What happened?
I will say though, on the source material card, they could have. Why'd they have to do it like that? They didn't have to zoom in. Like that's like one of those photos that my friends and I, we love doing this. Take a picture of each other and zoom in as much as possible, right? Like they could have just had this scene, but pull back the camera a little. You know, just pull it back.
I want to see they probably wanted to be like a Twitch emote or something. Like, I don't know. Like they had some like actual plan for this, right? But I want to see what it actually was because. In practice. And the other cards in the set don't look that bad, okay? It's just this Cruel Tutor. The choice of it specifically is terrible. And
yeah,
are you really going to play it, Sam? I might just walk up from the table and leave if you play this Cruel Tutor. Thank God it's Cruel Tutor. No one actually plays this, right?
I would only play it in a deck intentionally trying to be cringe. But yeah, if I was intentionally building a cringe deck, maybe. But otherwise, no. Anyway, we already ran long. We gotta wrap it up for today. No fish mail this week, but we'll get to it soon. Richard, how do people send in fish mail for future casts?
All right, hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 560 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard and Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about the rest of Avatar, standard bannings, and whatever else goes on in the world of magic. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.